Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the 90th Minute. We've got Lucas, Matt, and our guest, Pav. Greg and Liam cannot make it. Also, this is going to be released the day after Liam's birthday, so, happy birthday to him from all of us. Hope he's enjoying his day. And don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, share your thoughts with us about, the world game, maybe your Euro thoughts. We'll dive into that later, maybe. But, yeah, and of course, with the Euros coming up, Europe's best football is back this summer for the Euros. Avoid a marijuana Fellaini bush in your midfield and clean up your midsection with Manscaped, proud sponsors of the 90th Minute Podcast. Be a proper man this tournament and shave your balls with a brand new Lawnmower 4.0 and ultra-smooth package. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. With this exclusive offer for you, 20% off and free shipping worldwide using code 90th. So use code 90th for 20% off and free shipping with Manscaped. We highly recommend the new Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer. It's available in USA and Canada right now. It's a waterproof trimmer. It's got 7,000 RPM featuring skin-safe technology to keep your balls in check, of course. And interestingly enough, you could also buy a crop gel from them where see where you're shaving with their unique clear shaving gel just for the groin. So that's really interesting. So don't forget to use code 90th, 20% off at checkout, manscaped.com, and free shipping with code 90th. There we go. All right, let's get into the football. I think we should start with some of the news that broke out this Sunday, I guess, the awards, PFA Player Awards.
Yeah, the PFA Player Awards. There's some people happy with some of the awards that were given out, like the Team of the Season. There's other things that are a bit controversial, which we can get into. Pav, you're the guest. Which one of the awards do you want to speak about?
Let's delve into the Team of the Season first. I actually thought, so when I looked it over, it wasn't the worst team. I mean, normally there are a couple of inclusions that are a little bit puzzling, but for the most part, they were understandable. Harry Kane up top. Actually, would you mind reading it out for me? Because from what I remember, it was fairly solid, but if you have it on you.
What I remember, was it Ederson, Net, Cancelo, Stones, Diaz, Shaw, Gundogan, De Bruyne?
Bruno in midfield, and then Son, Harry Kane, and Mohamed Salah up top. So for that Team of the Season, I'm actually quite satisfied with that. I think that the front three was a good selection. I think the midfield three was a good selection. And I think the back four, the only two disputable options are possibly Ederson in goal. You could have replaced him with Emiliano Martinez, or maybe even an Edouard Mendy. And for Stones at center back, there were multiple options. There was Stones, there was Fofana, there was Maguire, there was potentially even Thiago Silva. So there were a multitude of options, but I think all of those are reasonable. I can see the reasoning behind all of them. There isn't any ludicrous inclusions that really don't make sense to me.
Matt, do you agree?
Yeah, it all looks pretty good from my side, to be fair. The only person I'm surprised was, actually, maybe Declan Rice, but those three midfielders were all better than him this season, so no. It all looks pretty good from this end.
Only thing I'm surprised, I think the only thing that I saw on social media, people were like, where's Conte?
but even then, though, when it was originally released, I didn't see much outrage in regards to him. That was more so after the Champions League final. I also released my own personal Premier League Team of the Season, and I got no shouts for him either. So I feel like we will most likely talk about him later on in the podcast, but for the most part, I feel like that is a consequence of very recent events.
Yeah, I saw no issues with it. I think it was perfectly put. Honestly, I can't see a player you probably... Maybe Declan Rice, like Matt said, but other than that, it's pretty perfect.
Let's go to the PFA Players Player this season, because I know that caused some more outrage, and I think I can understand to a lot of people's arguments here, because Kevin De Bruyne won the award, but there are some people saying it shouldn't be him.
I swear, I thought it was going to be Ruben Diaz, no?
Maybe I know a lot of people were calling for Bruno probably midway throughout the season, but I also don't see an issue with Kevin De Bruyne. I mean,
you know what I think, though, when it's these players voting, they're looking at it through a very different perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
First things first, they're not sitting there. Let's face it, these guys are multimillionaires. They're probably hanging out with some model in some beach in, I don't know, the Spanish Riviera or the French Riviera. I don't think that they're checking the numbers and checking the statistics and checking the achievements and just lining them all up together. I think they're probably looking at it as more so, who's the player that blows me away the most when I come up against them? And one, I think you probably come up against De Bruyne the most because it's easiest for players all over the field to run into him. And I think, too, again, he's a phenomenal footballer. Obviously, he does things that many players in the Premier League cannot do. So I think a lot of that plays into Kevin De Bruyne being voted in. That being said, would I have voted for him? No, absolutely not. But I think when you take into account what goes into this voting process for these players, it's a very different criteria than, say, for example, what we would do.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't have an issue with him being player of the year, especially if it's like, you know, voted by the players. I mean, they play alongside him, they play against him, they kind of have a different view on the game, they're more involved, so, and like you said, they kind of just, they're chilling, they're like, oh, I'll vote for him, whatever, yeah. So.
I mean, my only thing is, I think if you take out Kevin De Bruyne out of Manchester City, I think City are still a fantastic team that would win the league title. If you take Harry Kane out of Spurs,
yeah,
much different story, I would say, I would argue, and I mean, most goals, most assists, I know those are simple numbers, but those are incredible numbers for a striker to be first in both. But I can understand the Kevin De Bruyne argument as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's from the perspective. I think it's just who wows them the most. Again, who's the most different from any other player that they've faced. So, I mean, there's not as much that goes into it as, say, for example, for us. For us, we would have, again, a whole different list of criteria and what we would analyze. So.
Then Manchester City defender Ruben Diaz is named Premier Player of the Season. I guess that this one was more voted by reporters or journalists?
I believe so.
I'm not 100% sure about the Premier League one. It might be. I know there's the FWA, which is the writers, that said Ruben Diaz was the player of this season. I'm not 100% sure if the Premier League version was actually voted by fans or a percentage of votes are from fans. I know the player of the month is like that. Ruben Diaz definitely had a huge impact on Manchester City this season. I don't think he was even City's first choice to come into the side this on transfers. I think there's a lot of rumors about Koulibaly in the summer, but he came in and exceeded every expectation.
They also signed Nathan Ake before, and I think there was a little bit more hype around him at some point because he was playing in the Premier League. He was Premier League proven, right? So, but yeah, he's got almost, I guess you can say, like a Van Dijk impact almost. I don't know if it's as strong, but yeah, it could be compared maybe.
I completely agree. I think he's had a very strong impact, but at the same time, it's a little bit weird because last season, Rodri was not as good as he was this season. Mm-hmm. Stones, obviously, his game is in hand. João Cancelo has taken a step above at Manchester City this season. So has Zinchenko. So it was almost the perfect circumstance for him to win this award. But at the same time, again, a lot of people were saying Harry Kane. For me, Harry Kane was my choice. Is it a robbery, such as some people have suggested? I don't think so. I think it was tighter than a lot of people expected it to be, but at the same time, I personally would have chosen Kane, but I can understand the Diaz selection.
Matt, what are your thoughts about the choices that were picked for the Player of the Year in different categories?
I mean, as I said before, I thought it would have ended up being Ruben Diaz. Harry Kane's also a good shot. I'm not sure if Kevin De Bruyne was really a standout as those two players were this season. Man City probably wouldn't be where they are today without Ruben Diaz in that squad. Even at the game, you could say of John Stones, who's also even made it into the team this season. But am I mad with it? No. Did Kevin De Bruyne still have a good season? Yes. As Pav said, is it robbery? I don't think it's robbery per se.
Yeah.
I think it was just more unexpected than anything else.
And I know some people could say maybe like, oh, Harry Kane could deserve it because of the stats he put up. But at the same time, where Spurs finished, I think giving it to a player that's seventh?
It's not really about where your team finishes.
I understand that, but at the same time, if Spurs maybe finished a bit higher, maybe, but...
Well, I'd argue like the team awards are the Premier League title, really.
Yeah, true. Then again, I think a few United supporters would be like, oh, what about Bruno? I mean, I feel like Bruno just didn't perform necessarily towards the end of the season as much, I guess. I feel like in the recent last matches he just wasn't as not important, but the statistics didn't really pile on, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he was more important from the beginning of the season to the middle of the season, and then yeah.
I think good points all around there. Let's move on. I think it'd be interesting to talk about some transfer rumors going on, and also some managerial changes that are happening that kind of shocked some people. I mean, well, let's talk about the managers first, because for a few days there, Spurs got us there. We thought they were getting Antonio Conte for a second, but that ended up not happening at all.
Oh, that was never going to happen, man.
It seemed too good to be true for them.
The guy literally just left Inter because he didn't have financial backing. Why would he ever go to Tottenham?
And that's the main reason. Levy wasn't willing to give him the finances he wanted. Apparently, he wasn't willing to reinvest the transfer fee if Harry Kane was sold for a new player. So, I don't know what they were expecting. I'm just confused.
How do you expect to get somebody... Again, Antonio Conte, with his track record, leaves Juve because of the lack of transfer funding.
Yeah. There was
the infamous saying of, you can't go to a $100 restaurant with a £10 note. Leaves Chelsea because he and the board fell out over transfers. He wanted the likes of Lukaku, Van Dijk. Instead, he got Morata and Antonio Rudiger, who, I mean, in the end, did work out.
Yeah.
As we can see with the Champions League victory. And then at Inter, again, £80 million worth of players that needed to be sold, or euros worth of players that needed to be sold. He wasn't all right with that, so he left. So with Tottenham, the only way that he would get the money to spend is if they sold Harry Kane and reinvested those funds back into his project, but it was never going to happen. And it's a weird one, because I saw a lot of people as well, a lot of Chelsea fans, praising Antonio Conte for turning down Tottenham, you know, claiming that he was loyal, once a blue, always a blue. He still came to the table. He still negotiated with them. If he had gotten what he wanted, he would have joined. So... that was a weird transfer saga. To be fair, it did last about 2 days. Yeah. So it was a short but very interesting saga right there.
Yeah. But the other one that was pretty shocking, to be honest, because I don't think any of us expected this to be for him to become the manager of Real Madrid after Zidane left. But Carlo Ancelotti leaves Everton.
That was weird. And yeah. Goes to Real Madrid. I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I can understand it, but it's like,
I feel so bad.
It's like when you're fans. It's like when you're playing FIFA That's career sad. Mode, and you're managing a small club, and all of a sudden, like, you know, Real Madrid comes, like, okay, I'll go. It's middle. It's like, I don't know. I'm kind of sad, because I wanted to see what he could have done with Everton going into next season, but let's be real here. If Real Madrid comes calling, it's like, you're probably going to go. Would you rather be living in, you know, Merseyside, nothing against, but or go live in Madrid, you know? As a manager, especially, I feel.
And work with the players that are at Madrid as well. But
yeah,
I mean, Zidane leaving, I feel like that just destabilized the club a little bit, because now they're on this mad dash for managers. They have Allegri available. They have Conte available. So they have some good managers available. But again, the way that I think about it is we know of Real Madrid's financial issues. Florentino Perez has openly gone out and thoroughly address these issues in the media, claiming how Real Madrid are not doing well financially and due to COVID and everything. So I feel like this is almost a cheap option where Carlo Ancelotti can come in, keep everybody happy because he has a very good relationship with a lot of the players at the club. Who knows, maybe even Gareth Bale comes back, because apparently, I don't know, him and Ancelotti may have a good relationship. So this almost, it doesn't so much feel like a stopgap. It feels like a Band-Aid over an axe wound. It's like, okay, hopefully we don't decline enough to the point where Real Madrid then lose profit. But at the same time, we can get a cheap manager in who can maybe do a job for us until we financially recuperate. I think that's how this signing really looks to me.
Yeah, I always think about managers going back to their old clubs. I'm usually never a big fan of it, because usually you can never match what you did the first time. I always say never go back. And I think there's several instances where that can be true. But I mean, I'm sure there's been times where managers or players have gone back to old clubs and have had success. So, I mean, best of luck to Carlo Ancelotti. I know Real Madrid's a very stressful job. That's one of the reasons why Zidane left. But yeah, Matt, do you have any overall thoughts about anything like any of those topics?
Man, I think he was plan B. That's literally what he was.
I think he was plan F.
You know they wanted Allegri. And that guy said, fuck no, and went to Juventus, which I honestly don't know why you'd do that either. But
I mean, for all like the luxury that Real Madrid kind of has, it's kind of a headache right now with Fiorento Perez, the Super League, some of even their players sometimes cause controversy in the media, and this is like, you know, this is post Ronaldo era Real Madrid still. I mean, last time Ancelotti was there, he won the Champions League. I think he got sacked in the year next year, didn't he?
Yeah, you're
kind of weird in my opinion. That was kind of weird. I'm like,
I think he got sacked with 92 points in the season too.
Maybe. So, I mean, the standard at Real Madrid was damn high back then, and I assume it's still that high. Like, they won the league last year, and now, I mean, you lose to Atletico and you're sacked. Well, he didn't get sacked, right?
So yeah, he left on his own terms.
Yeah. Supposedly he left because... He's
on his own terms.
Yeah. And then watch him come back two seasons later. It's like, okay, things are nice now. So.
I can see it.
But the last thing I really want to get to before we get to some Chelsea talk, involves Arsenal, Chelsea's rivals, Arsenal, and there's rumors about them getting Buendia, but instead, Buendia, he's going to Aston Villa for around 32, 33 million. Pretty good signing for Aston Villa,
I would say so. Buendia and Jack Grealish hopefully next season for Villa, that's not bad. I don't know if Watkins will stay, but...
Oh, he will.
It depends if those key players stay, but they're building a good team.
Buendia's phenomenal. He's a great signing, and I think he probably... If he went to Arsenal, he would have immediately become the talisman at the club. So Arsenal are losing out on a potentially talismanic type player because they weren't willing to pay an extra $5 million for him when this was the Championship Player of the Year. He's actually, yeah. I think he may be the only player in Europe's top five leagues or something, like in the German system, in the Italian, French, English, Spanish, whatever. So I believe get over 15 goals and 15 assists, respectively, in his league. So I read a statistic about that. It was absolutely crazy. But here's the thing as well. People will say, oh, well, he's a player coming from the Championship. You know, you never know. Last season, when he was in the Premier League for Norwich City, his creative metrics were off the charts. They were fantastic. They were up with some of the best players in the league. So for Arsenal not to pay $5 million, I was seeing a lot of people... bantering Arsenal about, oh, you can't even compete with Aston Villa. But then I was seeing Arsenal fans saying, well, it wasn't so much that he couldn't compete with them. It's just we didn't want to pay an extra $5 million for him. Isn't that just as bad?
Yeah.
You can't pay an extra $5 million for a player who will surely be great in the Premier League, and instead you opt to sign somebody else. That's not competing either. You're not competing either way. You're just falling apart just in a different sense. So that was quite laughable, and I think it will be an even more painful summer for Arsenal than potentially even last summer.
Yeah, especially if they don't get Odegaard either. Like, I know that's their number one target, I think. And also apparently Bissouma wants to go to Arsenal, which would be a pretty good signing to get in the midfield, especially if Xhaka leaves. But yeah, Arsenal, once they got eliminated from the Europa League and missed out on European football, it's just I've been concerned about them, and I'm not really sure how it's gonna go for the next few years.
Oh, they're gonna be average. That's how it's gonna go.
Or just continue to decline.
Hopefully not, but I peg them for an average club at this point.
Right now, there's not a lot of like light at the end of the tunnel for Arsenal and Arsenal supporters. You got some pretty good youngsters coming through, I would say, recently, like Saka, Emile Smith Rowe, and whatnot. But it's not like, you know, they're kind of in this position where Liverpool was maybe 10 years ago, where you guys are kind of struggling for like Europa League. But the thing is, you guys were able to bring in the likes of Jurgen Klopp. You got more backing from your board, and just turned around the ship, and now you guys are. Mainstays almost in the top four, while Arsenal, it's like, are they ever going to get back into that position?
Yeah, I think usually when your team is struggling, you want to get a manager who can take you from A to B. In Jurgen Klopp's case, he took Liverpool from A to C with the Premier League and Champions League. Arsenal, they went with a manager who is not proven as a manager, only proven as an assistant manager. And while he did win an FA Cup, which fair play to them.
I think Arteta, he had like the perfect audition at first. You know, he had that like that first like couple months at Arsenal. He won like Community Shield, FA Cup, pretty impressive. He beat United a couple times. It's where it's one manager that Ole can't beat sometimes. And then, yeah, it was just a perfect start to life for Arteta, and then he just couldn't get the squad to work with the way he wanted, I guess.
I think we can move on, though. And, you know, Pav, you're a Chelsea supporter. You had a great week. talk to us all you want about Chelsea right now. It's your time.
So, I think it's safe to say confirmed. The biggest club in London. It was a great week for every fan of that club.
Not a lot of competition right now, man.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But, you know what it is? It's faith for this summer. And I think, listen, the Champions League victory was fantastic. Obviously, I enjoyed myself. But the future implications of that are also massive. Because now, you can imagine every player that's available this summer will take a look at Chelsea and think to themselves, I wouldn't mind going there. Especially with Tuchel and the fantastic players that are at Chelsea and the mentality and the culture. It's in London as well, which is a very attractive city for players to move to. So I think that they have a lot going for them this summer. Also, you have to think about it. In terms of four teams, probably the four most lucrative teams in the world right now. PSG, Manchester City, Chelsea, and Bayern. Now, Bayern are not able to financially compete to the extent that those other three can, just because of the German model and the impacts that it has financially. But they still have a lot of pedigree, and I think most importantly, they have a firm hold on the Bundesliga. But with PSG, City, and Chelsea, they're very secure financially. Roman Abramovich's value has actually increased this year, which is very very positive. We actually made a profit during the COVID window as well of, I believe it was $30 million. So we have run our club financially very well. So I think what that allows us to do then is spend the money that we need to get the players that we want. Not to settle for sloppy seconds, but to get well and truly what we want. And I think what we want for this summer specifically is an elite striker. One of Harry Kane, Erling Haaland, and Romelu Lukaku. And what encourages me is there were rumors, Olivier Giroud, his contract is going to expire and he's going to be released. He's going to be let go. That same day, Olivier Giroud, it's confirmed by Chelsea themselves that he has renewed his contract and he's staying at Chelsea. Which means that none of the news that we hear in regards to Chelsea, I believe, is reliable. I think a lot of what we're being fed right now is a bit of a smokescreen, a bit of a fugazi, and we really have no idea what Chelsea will do. And I think that's both a blessing and a curse, just a curse because that means that anything that can go wrong will go wrong. But with the positives that come with that, if it does work out, what it shows is Tuchel and Mourinho are on the same page, they're getting who they need, and nobody has any idea about it. So I hope that that's the scenario right there that we're dealing with, rather than we just don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, I know. It was weird, interesting with Giroud, because I read something like he was about to sign with AC Milan. Like he was right about to do it, and then all of a sudden you guys re-sign him, which was interesting. So, I give total credit and praise to Chelsea for what they've done. They just completely... I think people are kind of surprised the way Tuchel managed things. I mean, they're so tough to break down, it seems. Everything just seems to work perfectly in the back line. And if you guys can get a consistent goal score, I mean, what do you think of Timo Werner right now?
So, I was on a previous podcast. In terms of reviewing his season, I actually gave him a 6. Because I think as poor as he has been in regards to his finishing, and I think if he had put away some of those chances, we would be in a better position in the league. But here's the thing. You still see the threat that he provides. You still see how the runs stretch the opposition. You still see the impact that he has regardless of his goal-scoring impact. So I think it would be interesting if he could, say, for example, play off of a Harry Kane or a Lukaku. Not so much a Haaland, because Haaland's somebody that you don't really play off of. He's more somebody that you supply, which wouldn't be Timo Werner's forte, which is kind of why I don't want Haaland out of those three that are available. Potentially available as options. Out of those three options, Haaland would probably be the one that I want the least. But I can see what he offers. So I'm definitely open to keeping him in the summer and trying to integrate him within the starting lineup and the squad. So
How do you see Kai Havertz working next season? Because he's been performing a lot better towards the end of this season after a rough season in general.
Technically, I think he's very underrated. He's somebody who, I think, despite his lankiness, despite his almost sort of like awkward-looking running, he glides across the pitch. And I think his ball control is so underrated. Again, for a person of his frame, it's very underrated. And I think we specifically saw that against Manchester City. So many times he received the ball and was able to keep it up, was able to link other players into play. Obviously, the Christian Pulisic chance that came in the second half of that final. So, again, he's somebody that I would really be interested in seeing, again, playing alongside an elite striker. Maybe he's the guy who makes the runs and he runs off of that striker, or even the opposite. I think we have a lot to work with in terms of our players, but I trust Tuchel to come up with the right system and the right starting lineup and to build some sort of consistency. Not so much in we're playing the same lineup every week, every game, but more so consistency in terms of every lineup that we're picking is going to be based off players that we actually believe can win the game, rather than Tuchel experimenting. Which is fair enough, because when he first came into the job, his first match was in 24 hours. He was essentially figuring everything out on the spot.
I guess since we're talking about Chelsea, I think we should kind of maybe get into the whole the N'Golo Kante hype right now that's going around all over social media. You know, people are putting him in for Ballon d'Or and whatnot. And Pav, just give us your thoughts on it, man. I know you've had some interesting thoughts.
Well, so when I was first asked about this, this was right after the Champions League victory, I said, you know what, give it time. Because, yes, the first half of 2020 has not been worthy of a Ballon d'Or victory, because he has been rotated in and out with Kovacic and Jorginho. Again, Tuchel's trying to figure everything out. And Conte's also been dealing with some niggling injuries, etc. Kovacic and Jorginho, again, have also been performing very well under Tuchel. So, again, there's been rotation. So, I think with that in mind, it's very difficult to award Conte the award for best player of the year when that was his scenario in the first half of the season. I understand he did very well in Champions League games, but he maybe did not replicate those performances in the Premier League because you're trying to break down low-block teams. Teams are defending very much against you. It's very difficult to replicate the same performances that Conte had in the Champions League because it doesn't suit his skill set as much. That being said, if he wins the Euros and he's the player that everybody thinks he is, which, I mean, again, he's a great player. If he performs the way that everybody expects him to in the Euros this season, if Chelsea put in a title charge and he's a key component to that, then yes, I can definitely see him certainly being a contender, but I think for now it's very premature. We have to wait a little bit.
The kind of way I view it, it's like, you know, people are calling him to win the Ballon d'Or now, but at the same time, it's like he wasn't in the PFA team of the season. I know most of the performances people are calling from the Champions, but you got to put the Premier League in consideration. He wasn't in the PFA team this season. He wasn't, you know, nominated really for PFA Player of the Year or PFA Players of the Year. It's like, how are you going to give him the Ballon d'Or when he's not winning these other individual awards?
And he didn't even win Chelsea Player of the Season. He didn't even win Chelsea Player of the Season either. Mason Mount won it. And I mean, think, honestly, he would have just as good of a case, possibly. And
yeah,
again,
no,
Jorginho.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and again, like, you think about it, like, Rudiger, if Germany win the Euros and he, you know, the defense is really solid, if Jorginho wins it with Italy and he's been very good under Tuchel, like, there's so many scenarios. Again, if Messi wins the Copa America with Argentina, if the Copa America even happens, if there's so many ifs. I say if a lot during this conversation because there's so many uncertainties. And it also feels very much like a flavor of the month type decision as well for me. Because if you were to go back 2 weeks and say who deserves the Ballon d'Or, I think it would be very difficult for you to find somebody to say N'Golo Kante. So right now, it's very turbulent. It's all, you know, going with the wind, essentially. So we're just going to have to wait and see. That's all.
They won. He won 4 Man of the Match awards in the Champions League knockout stages, which is fantastic. I mean, no one's going to deny how well he played, but I think it was Didier Deschamps, actually, put out this, what he said about N'Golo Kante and Ballon d'Or. He's like, N'Golo, he does not have the numbers of an attacker. He can score a few goals, but because of what he does, everyone must have watched his last games, especially the final of the UCL. N'Golo is also a driving force. The Ballon d'Or, he deserves to win it. But, I mean, like, that's such a small sample size of matches to win the Ballon d'Or. Like, I'm just like, what?
I said this on TikTok. There's a massive Champions League bias when it comes to the rating of players because of the fact that it's much more easy to digest. There's less matches. It's more frequently watched. More people watch it. And it almost brings audiences from different leagues together. So say, for example, again, if you're a Real Madrid fan and I'm a Chelsea fan, we're going to be watching the same game. We're going to be watching our teams face off. So again, that brings other fan bases together. So I think that's why more people... They're overvaluing the Champions League performances just a little bit. I understand it's on the biggest stage and it's fantastic, but we really have to stay realistic in a sense. But at the same time, this is the Ballon d'Or that we're talking about. To an extent, it very much is a popularity contest. So we're going to have to see. The only difference is N'Golo Kanté is coming up against a man, Messi, who may just be as, if not more popular than he is. So that's going to be a battle of the Titans as well as Lewandowski.
I generally feel like it's just... His nice guy reputation is what's really making people want him to win the Ballon d'Or right now. It's kind of clouding their thought process behind it all as well, I feel.
He actually came out today as well with comments saying, listen, I'm not as nice of a guy as you may think.
Yeah, even this is what he said. I'm just a normal guy, a player amongst others. There's no need to say I'm the kindest or the nicest. It is overblown. There are other people like that in football. We don't need to make a whole story or sometimes exaggerate things. And Matt, I was going to say, what are your thoughts on N'Golo Kanté and the whole Ballon d'Or talk?
I mean, it's a fad. Ballon d'Or in itself is a fad. It's never been merit-based, which is why I don't understand why people argue about who should win it. It's honestly, the person who's going to win it is the person who's going to win the Euros. I'm calling it now. If Messi wins, as Pav said, if Messi wins the Copa America, if they don't boycott it, he'll win it. Lewandowski's not going to win it, so I'm not going to speak on him. Just sorry, guys. There's no way.
Hey, man, that's okay.
If France win it, Kanté will get it. It's really just what people are thinking in that moment. People thought it was merit-based for the last 10 years because Messi and Ronaldo have both been scoring like 85,000 goals a season for the past 10 years. But it really hasn't ever been that way.
If Lewandowski was to win it, I think what he would need to do with the Euros, and I'm being very realistic here, he's going to have to drag Poland out of that group.
I
don't see that happening, but if he's going to make a stronger conversation to win the Ballon d'Or, he's going to have to maybe put in like 4 to 5 goals, get to out of that group, because that group's
got to the semifinals, really.
You think semifinals? I was thinking maybe get 5 goals, 4 goals, and he'd be maybe...
He's going to have a Luka Modric-esque.
Yeah, you're not even wrong, because he's not scored more than one goal at a major international competition with Poland. And, you know, World Cup, he was the whole team ghosted. I don't want to talk about the team. 2016, he scored in the first 4 minutes against Portugal in the quarterfinal. And then Euro 2012, he scored the opening goal against Greece. So other than that, Lewandowski has not contributed enough at an international competition.
Like you said, I think that's more to do with the team around him, I think.
No, 100%, I agree, yeah. And the managers.
Yeah, the manager. So. Oh.
So we've had some awful managers.
Punching your ticket if you make it past the group stage. I'm going to say that right now.
we're gonna release a Euro 2020 prediction video soon here, but I was going to say with Poland, the only way they're going to get through maybe to the next round is if they get kind of lucky like Portugal and finish third in their group and somehow qualify that way.
You have hope, Paul.
I have hope. It's just that's a tough group, man. I don't even know. I don't have any expectations.
Well, like you were saying, Waz, we are going to make our predictions with Liam and Greg in the next few days here and release it. But we got Pav here. You know, Pav, he's very knowledgeable on certain countries in this Euros especially.
Yeah.
Like Croatia, you know, could you, you know, teach us about some of these countries?
Yeah, first of all, beautiful beaches. That's what we're that's what we're known for. But Croatia is probably the most bipolar national team out there. We can lose to Armenia and we can beat England in the space of a week. That's how we roll. That's how we function. So it almost encourages me that we're facing England first in the Euro group stage, just so that we can almost sort of set the tone for our campaign. Mm-hmm. Again, we So in the 2018 World Cup, we set the tone by beating a relatively hyped up Nigeria team. You know, there was a lot of hype surrounding them at the time. And then we really set the tone by beating Argentina 3-0. And that was what made us think, this ain't going to be a typical tournament for Croatia. This is going to be something exciting. And then as things went on, it was more and more of a bar fight with each match. Denmark, Russia, England in extra time. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how Croatia play. That midfield, Brozovic, Kovacic, Modric, that's the jewel in the crown. Perisic is getting a little bit older. You have Rebic, but you also have Brekalo and Vlasic and other players. Up top, you have Kramaric. The defense, the left-hand side has changed. So now it's Dujic Letizar instead of Dejan Lovren. And then it's also Borna Barisic, who plays for Rangers instead of Ivan Strinic. And also the goalkeeper is different. So it's more so the backline that's been changed rather than the midfield or the attack. But it is going to be interesting. And I do trust in Zlatko Dalic just because, I mean, he got us to a World Cup final. That guy, if that guy ever gets sacked, there's going to be riots.
I have one question. Will Vida be there?
Domagoj Vida? Yeah, he'll be there.
Oh, yes. Okay. I don't care if he's even on the...
No one asked that. Anyone but you. You're the only person who asked that.
Oh, I love that guy at the last World Cup. He was my favorite center back.
I love Vida. When he went Slavo Ukraini after beating Russia, I was like, my guy. He bridged the gap for me because I'm Ukrainian and Croatian, so love it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, what about the Ukrainian team then? What are you feeling about them?
I think that they're one of the dark horses. I think with the qualification campaign that they had, they were excellent. They obviously beat Portugal in qualifying, which was a massive achievement for us. And I think the biggest thing that we have in our corner built up to this. Ukraine have been revamping their youth system for a very long time now. We have a lot of young players coming through. We have the likes of Oleksandr Zinchenko, who is obviously a great player for Manchester City. They're starting left back. We also have Ruslan Milanovski, who's been fantastic for Atalanta as of recent, specifically in terms of his goal-scoring form. We also have Sihankov, who's good for Dynamo Kyiv. So it's very interesting. And again, for Shevchenko to be the manager, it's almost written in the stars a little bit. But that being said, we're up against the Netherlands. I think that we can beat them. Austria. They seem solid, but I still think that we could beat them. And North Macedonia, who I think in themselves are also sort of dark horses. So I think that there's every opportunity for Ukraine to top the group. I think it's a little bit boom or bust, but listen, ball don't lie. And Ukraine have done well recently. World Cup qualifying has maybe not gone the same way. I believe we've drawn all of our games, including against France, a strong France team. So I'm very interested to see what happens. And I think that we can both exhibit our own strengths and also capitalize on the weakness of other teams within our group.
Looking at that group, I think you do have a solid chance of finishing first, because I don't think the Netherlands is as strong as people assume they are right now.
Yeah.
I agree.
What else was I going to mention about? Okay, so back to Croatia, I was going to ask you. I don't know how you say his name, but Tsar, the center back you mentioned?
Dujic Letizar. I know I mentioned him before.
Yeah, you mentioned before. I know you wanted, I think, Chelsea to target him, or Liverpool to target him last year. I don't know. But
Liverpool did target him, but I'll still give you a little bit of a rundown on him. So, I mean, he's a starter for Marseille, but Marseille they've experienced really turbulent season this season. I think he's still been okay. He was linked with Liverpool halfway through the season, which I think shows you the qualities that they do see within him. And I am very interested to see how he plays in this Euros. Listen, I still think he's a very good center back. I still think he's somebody who can be a key player for Croatia. But again, we'll just have to wait and see. But I think it's definitely difficult to judge the Marseille players this season because of how turbulent their season has been with the board, with Andre Villas-Boas, with Sampaoli then coming in. So it's a little bit weird. This season was a bit of a weird season for Marseille.
Other nations we should touch up on?
What are some dark horses you think that will happen in the World Euro Cup? Mixing up two tournaments, the Euros. I mean, that's fair points. I know Italy have been incredible in matches. I don't think they've lost a match maybe since 2018. They haven't conceded a goal in a while.
I think that's the statistic. They haven't lost a match since 2018.
Yeah, I know when Poland took them on the Nations League, Poland legit didn't know how to beat them. We just didn't know what to do against that Italian side. I mean, to be fair, our manager was very...
I feel like that's a theme for you guys, though.
Well, we beat Germany once. That was cool. we had a run where we did things. That was cool, so...
We almost got to a Euro semifinals.
we did well against England in the last World Cup qualifier, so it looks there's hope, I guess.
That's
but England, like I said, just Italy's just very well ran right now, I guess. The interesting thing to say about the Euros right now, I think we should talk about, is that no Real Madrid player got called up. A lot of people were for Spain. Yes, yeah, my bad. That's kind of interesting. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I heard from somewhere that it's a political decision by Luis Enrique. I think it may have to do with the Super League, but
I mean, okay.
Barcelona are still technically in it, so why would you?
Yeah,
that I think that may just be a rumor, but I'm
actually
that is a little bit perplexing.
This is what Arsene Wenger said about it. He says that it's unbelievable that Spain has no players from Real Madrid. But I don't think it's a problem with Enrique. The last few years, Real Madrid and Barcelona are weaker, therefore Spain is weaker. Spain deserves huge credit. I've never seen a team that's dominated three consecutive tournaments. So, I mean, to be fair, Atletico Madrid just won the title as well. But, you know, I know Isco, no Asensio. I don't know if that's due to injuries.
Never going
to
make it, yeah.
Yeah.
No. The guy did not play this season.
I think the only head-scratcher, like we mentioned on TikTok, was Nacho not being called up. And Sergio Ramos, I know he has been injured, but, like, he is the captain, and we've seen.
Yeah,
and you—they literally have two empty spots left.
I'm honestly surprised Lucas Vasquez didn't make it to that squad after the season he's
honestly,
had.
Yeah,
I mean, Marcos Llorente has been filling in at right back, so that's probably going to be him playing there. I mean, they have Pau Torres, and they also have Aymeric Laporte now at center back, and I think that was really the only spots where Real Madrid players would have legitimately. Yeah. Had a case was in the defensive slots, and they seem to already have those covered. So
I mean, Eric Garcia, I don't think deserves it over them, though.
No,
yeah, he didn't play. He didn't.
Probably not going to play next season either. But
no,
it's going to like we mentioned, like yeah. Their back line is going to look very different this tournament. No Gerard Piqué as well, which not surprising, but mm-hmm. it's just you know the eras are finally kind of coming to an end.
Yeah, but we're not going to make any predictions, but do we have any expectations for this tournament?
I think France is going to win it. Honestly,
I think it's going to be very exciting. I've noticed that the Euros are always just always enjoyable. 2012 was a good time. 2016, I think it's going to be an enjoyable tournament.
I think... What do I think? So I did a bracket. So there was a Euros predictor bracket. I'm not sure if that's what you guys will be using when you do your prediction video. But I had Italy winning it. For some reason, I had Italy beating Spain in the semifinal. I'm not sure what compelled me to say that, but that's what I had. It was just a gut feeling. But I'm expecting some matches to be exciting. I am expecting some, but I think a lot of them will be grinders at the same time, very similar to Euro 2016. I think Euro 2016 was dramatic, but some of those games weren't exactly goal fests. Yeah. They were more so very tight, very sort of tactical battles, and I do expect some of that with this tournament.
I really nothing against the English supporters, but I kind of hope Croatia puts a sword to them in the first game.
Hey, no,
I mean
we
do
need
too.
Some hope.
Yeah,
we don't have a lot of it running around.
Just kind of I'm gonna circle back honestly to 2018 when you guys beat them in the final. And for whatever reason, England would kind of the English kind of downplayed. Oh, we made the semifinal. We lost to Croatia. I'm like, excuse me. So
yeah, give us some credit. How about that?
Yeah,
saying you guys played terribly. We played great. We played great. So
honestly, they just took advantage.
Yeah, I saw the England friendly today against Romania. I am a little concerned when they come up against teams that are a similar level to them. I feel like they're gonna have a problem, really. Well, beating them, really, because I don't know.
And we're a team who lives for the big games. We hate the small games. The small games are our weakness. The big games is when the best version of Croatia comes out. So
not the point. I hope Gareth Southgate really.
I hope he goes with the back five with the two defensive midfielders and just says, "Hey, Croatia, take what you like. Come on into my lovely estate, steal some stuff, leave, and we'll forgive you." Like, I really hope that that's the case with England. Mm-hmm. Smash and grab. Would love nothing more than that.
Would you really be a smash and grab at this point?
It depends on how the match plays out, but I'm not sure whether or not England will actually try and play with the ball or not. I just don't trust... I don't think anybody in England trusts Gareth Southgate.
No.
Honestly, yeah, it doesn't feel like it. There's always such... There's a lot of disdain around him, I guess. I guess to wrap up the pod, we'll just talk about some transfers going around.
Well, what about the hot and cold things of the week?
I totally forgot about it. The hot and cold performers of the week. We stole this from a podcast that I work on. I just edited it up, basically. We kind of call it our inform and outform performers of the week, Pav. And it's kind of like just something that was really good in football that you really enjoyed or anything else. And then out of cold is kind of, you know, out of form is something that negatively happened. So I'll start first. I guess my inform performer of the week or something that happened, I'll go with Fabrizio Romano. This is kind of a negative and a bad thing. Jadon Sancho is great personal terms. Yay.
But biggest Fugazi like- term in transfer saga. I hate that term. And whenever anybody says... Oh, players agree personal terms. I'm like, all right. You just told me to never ever believe anything that you've said that you say ever again.
Yeah,
come on.
United have restarted contracts. Assigned Jadon Sancho talks with the players' camp on personal terms. No official bid yet, though. Dortmund are prepared to.
What's the point then?
I'm gonna give my out of form performer of the week. Personally, I thought this was kind of funny. I'm gonna give it to Barcelona. For getting the Wijnaldum deal just hijacked.
I'm going to say it's hot performer of the week for that because I didn't fucking want him in the first place. So this might be just a big ball move on us. Okay? We didn't fold. We didn't give him more money like we would have 2 years ago. So I'm going to say it's a big ball move by our club.
Basically, it's been Mr. Wijnaldum has decided to join PSG. Barca have no intention to raise their bid after they agreed. The agreement ready by 2 weeks and medicals plan. Genie's now set to accept PSG. Jesus. I just love that hijack. It's like, that will just take him.
Apparently they doubled his wage as well, imagine. PSG.
He's not even that bad of a midfielder, though. I'm like...
Nah, dude. Kale. I'm going to spill this over. It's my hot performer of the week. I'm giving it to Juan Laporta for not biting on that shit. Are you fucking kidding me? They doubled his wages. What do you want us to do? Triple them. Kai's 30. Lucas. Any memorable moments from Gini Wijnaldum last season for you?
Last season, no, really.
Exactly. That's my point.
I think it's a good move by Barcelona not getting him. He's getting older. I appreciate the moments he had for Liverpool, the big moments like against Barcelona, against Manchester City, but this past season, it just he didn't look motivated at all. And he's also always the type of player that really never... He always plays it too safe, and it kind of slows the play down, and it caused problems for Liverpool this season, and I kind of wish that some of the playing time he got this season went to other players, but of course, injuries kind of wrecked that for us.
Actually, can I change my...
We're in the middle of mine, innit? Why don't you wait till the, okay. Wait till the end?
I'll change mine.
And going back into the cold performance week, guess what? It's going to be Barcelona again. Dude. We kept Koeman. So... I don't know why. We honestly could have just promoted like a youth coach, probably would have done the job, but we kept with him. It would have been worth the money to get rid of him, just murk that contract and call it a day. But we kept him. We're gonna sign Depay because of it, so now we're just gonna have Depay and Griezmann competing for the same role on the same wages until we can annex one of them next season to actually try and sign some players that we actually need. Just a low IQ play, but you know. On cold, Barcelona. Nothing new here.
I'll go next. I'll give my hot performer of the week to the Germany under-21 national team. They won the U21 Euros just a couple hours ago. Fantastic performance by them, really. Like, a lot of people are thinking this was one of the weaker German sides in the under-21s, and that's I mean, to be fair, Germany have done very well in this tournament in recent years, but great performance by them overall. And huge shout out to their manager, Stefan Kuntz, who he just keeps taking over these German teams. You know, there's always low expectations, and he always just smashes through the roof. Yes, that's his last name. Don't I know?
Man, chill, bro. Please breathe.
No, I saw your face. That's what made me laugh.
Yeah, that's what it was. Sure.
Trust me.
That's like Robin Koch or something like that.
Yeah.
But my cold performer of the week. I'll just give it to the Dutch, just because.
The Dutch.
I don't know. They drew against Scotland.
He just doesn't like the Dutch.
If you want, go get to like the LA Lakers or something.
I'll just give it to De Boer. I'm not a big fan of De Boer as a manager.
Many people are. He might be better than Coleman, though.
No, Coleman had a much better Dutch side than De Boer. 100%.
Okay, that's probably true. That's unfortunate then.
Is it my turn now?
Yes. Yeah.
Do the hot and cold performer of the week. Okay, let's see. So my hot performer of the week, I'm actually going to give it to Aston Villa. I really think that the Buendia signing is a fantastic signing for them. That Grealish and Buendia tandem next season, if Grealish stays at Aston Villa, will be unbelievable. I think that would be one of the best winger partnerships in the league, in fact, and I'm going to be very excited to see how they do. And I think also to pounce on a £35 million deal, I think that shows Aston Villa's ambitions, especially following this season. One of the most important things for a football club to do is to not rest on your laurels when you survive relegation. And that's what they did last season, and they're continuing to do that. So I think that's extremely important. But I think my cold performer of the week has to be Comminable. Has to be Comminable. Imagine this, boys. Imagine this. The Euros are canceled. They're just canceled. There's no rescheduling. There's no nothing. The Euros are just canceled. What do you think would happen? Now imagine that same scenario, but in South America. Yeah, now imagine that same scenario in South America. They can't host in Colombia because of the political unrest that's happening there. They can't host in Argentina because there's apparently 2,000 COVID cases per day. So now they're going to try and host it in Brazil, where there's the exact same scenario as well as political unrest. And now it looks like a lot of the stars will be speaking out about and protesting against via boycotting this year's Copa America. So now there's also the option that they could move it to America, but Comebol aren't acting fast enough. And apparently they're steadfast in keeping it in Brazil. So, boys, it is very possible that we could have the Copa America canceled this year. I think it's a possibility.
Watch some bullshit happen, and they somehow say Qatar's going to come. It's like, hey, guys, come over here. Come to Qatar.
You know what? If I'm Saudi Arabia, I take a punt, because they've already hosted the Super Copa in Italy, and also they hosted like the Super Cup in Spain. Like, they hosted it in Saudi Arabia. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was a late bid, but I mean, I really have no idea what Comminable is doing here. They're a mess. They're a mess right now. Again, imagine this happened with the Euros, the outreach that would happen.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
I'm gonna change my thing real quick here. I did the Jadon Sancho thing. That's kind of boring. I'm gonna give it to Canada my hot performer of the week, man. We beat Aruba 7-0. Hell yeah!
Night.
Love Aruba.
Yeah,
love,
man.
Aruba,
and then,
but we gotta do it to you this time.
You know what's funny? I think Davies and David got subbed on like sometime in the second half, and they just went out and scored like 3 goals. Oh, and Kyle Larin.
Aruba's a place people go to vacation. I didn't even know they had a football team.
The stats were 0 shots for Aruba, and Canada had 23 and 13 on target.
I thought it was just like some random like Mexican island or something.
And no one would judge you for thinking that. Nobody.
And then Canada takes on Suriname next, or however you pronounce the name.
Suriname.
Know
what it is?
I don't fucking know. It's Suriname. Bermuda like draw Trinidad and Tobago or something.
Both. Countries that probably shouldn't have
but
a national team.
Canada currently in their group has 23 goals for and 1 against, while Suriname has 15 and none against. So that group is just interesting. They got Bermuda, the Cayman Islands. It's like, I want to play cock. I want to go play.
You know what? I love Caribbean football. I love it because it's a bunch of countries that barely have enough land to even fit a football pitch on, trying to compete against America, Mexico, and Canada. God bless them, man.
Just
showing up and trying. That is the definition of, you know what, we're all winners here.
We're basically England's farm league, yeah. Jamaica.
Yeah, honestly.
Pretty much at this point.
They should really get a Cuban national team. They get a Cuban national team and everything is right in the world. Give me a Cuban national team right now. Right now and everything. It all comes full circle.
And then,
I'm just gonna see Fidel Castro just on the sidelines, just watching his team going, yep, they're going to Guantanamo.
And then all the players deport.
Yeah, all the players just deport over to America. All of a sudden, you have like some random players. Who are these guys?
CONCACAF's getting kind of interesting because in July, we also have the Gold Cup coming up, and I know a lot of people are hyped about that, but we do have USA Canada in that group. And this is, like, the best Canadian national team versus, like, maybe arguably the best American national team. So that's actually kind of interesting. I don't know. I'm hyped for that.
Yeah, we got maybe three good players. So
Kyle Aaron's decent.
So I said maybe three. Two for sure. Maybe three.
I don't know, man. I like some Junior Hoilett on it. We've got okay fringe players.
Look, for what Canada's had compared to previous years.
Yeah, bro, you're right.
Dude, it's the exact same team with Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies.
But I think the players
are... Yeah, but it's also Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies, though. That's the thing. Bro, that's the bonus of it.
Just play both strikers, see what happens.
And you got, what's his name from Turkey? Thibaut Hutchinson.
Apparently he's
old man Hutchinson.
Fucking hell.
From the Jurassic period? He's still
apparently
kicking. Yeah.
He's still playing.
And you got the one guy who played for Rangers too.
Just that random guy who played for Rangers. That's what he's known.
Doesn't even have his
name. Scott Arfield, there you go.
Google that. Yeah. He definitely Google that.
So
I just wish Fakao Tomori pick Canada, man.
Oh, if only we'd actually have a center back.
I can't blame him for not though.
It's okay, we picked up the guy from Portugal. Pat, did you hear about that guy who played for Portugal?
No, I have not.
This guy had like some ties to Canada, so when he became a professional footballer, he declared for Portugal, and then since he only got like two caps for Portugal, we decided to bring him back at like 27 years of age.
That's fantastic. I love it.
Of players Canada's working with. 27-year-old rejects. Nice.
But hey, man.
Nice. Hey, two caps. Two caps, it's not one.
Hey,
man. It could have only been one, but instead it's two.
But now it's like...
Every cloud is a silver lining, okay? It could have been one cap, but instead it's two, okay? Just be thankful.
Hey, man, but at least, Canada, it's like, I can go play for, you know, maybe England, or I can go play with Alphonso Davies, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to England.
You don't want to have vacations in Aruba?
And that says a lot, bro. England. I'm going from one country that won't win anything to another country that won't win anything. And I'm still picking England.
I mean, Portugal have won something, and he could have stayed there. I mean, he could have played with Cristiano Ronaldo, but he instead decided to play for Jonathan David. And
oh, but there's a big game tomorrow.
Decision. In all honesty, I think that may be the right decision.
Sure, if that was his choice.
Yeah, Matt, I googled the Jamaican national team, by the way.
Okay.
You guys got a big game tomorrow. Are you gonna wake up for it?
No, probably not.
It's 2 a.m. against Serbia.
What do you mean? You mean stay up for it? You mean wake up for it?
You're playing Serbia at 2 a.m.
I wonder how that's going to work. They're just walking down the streets of Belgrade. Just all these Jamaicans and... Just so out of place. So out of place.
Dude.
Just, you know what? You gotta... You know what? Forget bringing Jamaicans to Serbia. You gotta bring Jamaica to Serbia. You gotta bring the culture. You gotta bring everything. That's how it's gonna work.
Well, they got Ravel Morrison tearing it up, man.
Bro, please tell me that Matt's not actually playing for us.
No, I think he is, man.
Oh.
How is he not in a prison? How is he not a felon?
Dude, our justice system, just like every other system down there, is fairly corrupt, so it doesn't surprise me that man's running free.
You got Andre Gray.
There's not really any questions for the podcast. I know someone asked them.
Oh, right. YouTube questions.
There's not really any questions. Someone asked if we're going to do any content for the Euros. Yes. Someone asked what are going to be our positive surprise and negative surprise at the Euros. We kind of answered that during the Euro conversation. So I'm pretty sure we got through everything. Pav, thanks for coming on. We do really appreciate it. You brought some great knowledge today.
Pleasure. This was a pleasure.
Yeah, hopefully it won't be as long since last time when you come on again.
Yeah, well, we'll try to get you more on summer.
It's cool with me. I'll obviously stay in touch. I'll let you guys know my schedule. I don't really have much of a schedule, but just whenever I'm available. And yeah, this was a pleasure. Yeah. It's always a fun time. I'm always, again, going to try and hop on whenever, again, you guys invite me. So yeah, this was great. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
No worries. And I guess, yeah, that's all of us from the 90th minute. Wherever Liam is, hope he's had a good birthday. Greg's at work, so working in the lumber yard, that's what he works at.
Wherever Liam is right now, I can assure you he is not sober.
I don't know. The guy says he doesn't drink as much anymore, so. But, yeah, I guess.
I only have 10 beers on a weekend. I don't drink as much as I used to.
It's a false rookie numbers. Pathetic.
But yeah, from all of us at the 90th minute and Mr. Big Pav, this has been yet another week in the beautiful game, and we'll see you next time. Take care.